You know that the Golden Bachelor is getting divorced.
10 things I hate about the Golden Bachelor. 1, getting divorced.
All right. No, I just said this off mic like 10 seconds ago. All right. It's rom-com time.
Yeah. So you picked this because it's like a spring movie?
Yeah.
You said? Yeah.
Prom.
Cool. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. I'm Aaron.
I'm Tom.
This is Baby's First Watch List, the podcast where we watch movies and figure out if we want our kids to watch them. The answer, by the way, is always been yes.
Yes. It's also the podcast that is constantly sick.
Yeah, we're a little under the weather.
Yeah. So sorry if there's any sniffles or coughs that I leave in here, but I'm going to try and get them all out. I got my water. We're hydrating. Yeah. We're all good.
Yeah, totally.
We're going to make it work.
You got your DayQuil on.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just like freewheeling because I can't take DayQuil.
Yeah. At 7 months pregnant.
Hey, we're almost 8. Less than a week away from 8.
Almost 8.
Yep. We're almost there.
So that reminds me. Follow us on Instagram and all that if you want like updates, because like Aaron's going to have a baby soon and we're going to have 2 babies. So we're going to, if you want to know when that happens, follow us on Instagram. If you want to see more clips and stuff, follow us there. TikTok, YouTube, all at Baby's First Watch List. Letterboxd at BFW Podcast. We're going to have some stuff coming up, obviously. Like,
yeah.
We're going to, if you want to know what movies we're going to be doing next month, that'll be posted on Instagram at the end of the month. And then we're probably going to have we're talking things through about what we're going to be doing after that. So yes. Definitely follow us, especially on Instagram. That's our main area where we update. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so let's get into 10 Things I Hate About You.
Yeah, today's episode is about the 1999 romantic comedy 10 Things I Hate About You, which I have seen many times.
I have seen one time as of right now.
Yes.
This was my first watch of this movie.
Yeah. And it's an adaptation of the William Shakespeare play, in case you didn't know which Shakespeare. William Shakespeare play, The Taming of the Shrew.
Wasn't Stephen Shakespeare?
Wasn't. Not this one. So I read Taming of the Shrew when I was in 10th grade.
I never read it.
And then I read it again in college. I did a little like January term in London for
pretty cultured.
Yeah, it was a British theater class, so we got to see 10 plays in 10 days kind of
thing.
That
is really cool.
It was amazing. And one of the things, we saw 3 Shakespeare adaptations, and one of them was Measure for Measure, which was a little bit of a rated R version.
Okay.
That involved a certain fabric that is used in a certain for certain things.
Okay.
That I can't really talk about on mic.
Okay.
And that one was like, whoa, okay. And we saw that one in Stratford-upon-Avon. That wasn't even in London. Mm. We saw a black box version of Twelfth Night. That was really good. And then we saw a like an urban modern, like it took place in a city, version of Taming of the Shrew in London.
I've seen like 4 different versions of Othello.
Yeah, Othello's
but
great.
Not live. All movies.
Yeah.
Same with Macbeth.
Oh, well. And Hamlet's everywhere.
Yeah. I'm not a huge Shakespeare head. Like, I haven't delved deep into the Shakespeare universe. But
what's your favorite Shakespeare play?
Probably Hamlet.
Hamlet's good.
I think it's I don't know. It's the obvious one, but
King Lear's my favorite.
Okay.
King Lear is by far the best. Have you read King Lear?
No, but I watched Succession.
You would love King Lear.
Yeah, probably.
It is amazing, actually. It's definitely his best play.
I'm not uninterested in Shakespeare. I just haven't done. I haven't.
Yeah.
I wasn't interested in high school, and then.
Right, of course.
That was it.
Yeah, I think King Lear is great. Entry level Shakespeare, you got to do Romeo and Juliet. That's to me the easiest to understand.
Sure.
And
I've read Romeo and Juliet.
And if you want something kind of Game of Thronesy, Titus Andronicus is fun.
Yeah.
It's wild. And that's one that they say he possibly did not write.
That was Stephen.
That was Stephen. Exactly. So this movie was directed by Gil Junger.
Okay.
So he also directed, remember the movie Black Knight?
Yeah. Martin Lawrence?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then like he really didn't do very much, but do you know what he did do a couple years ago? WWE movie Santa's Little Helper. Remember with Miz and Paige was an elf?
Oh, my God.
That was when we still watched it.
2015, WWE. Yeah.
And there was like always ads for it. Yeah. So the movie was written by Kara McCullough and Kirsten Smith. They're a writing duo who have a very impressive
I read about them briefly.
Filmography. They wrote Legally Blonde, Ella Enchanted, She's the Man, which is the 12th Night adaptation, The House Bunny, and The Ugly Truth, which actually, when I watched it, was better than the reviews said.
I liked it back in the day. I don't know
if it holds up. Exactly. Yeah. But I liked it more than I thought
it would. That was during the whole hate on Katherine Heigl phase.
Very true.
So I don't know.
The Heigl hate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cinematographer Mark Irwin is wild. Did you look him up?
No, I did not.
So he's best known for working with David Cronenberg. So he did Videodrome.
Okay.
And he did The Fly.
Okay.
He
did 10 Things I Hate About You.
Yeah. He also shot Scream.
Wow.
There's Something About Mary. The live action scenes in Osmosis Jones.
Wow. That is, wow.
I'm not done. He did Old School. He did Malibu's Most Wanted. He did The Ringer. He then did some Grandma's Boy.
Oh my goodness.
He decided he was going to go into the Disney Channel movie route. He did Teen Beach Movie. And yes, he did Descendants 2.
Oh my goodness. You know what? I'm going to put him up there with Roger Deakins and with Dean Cundey.
Yeah.
As one of the greatest cinematographers of all time.
Yes, we love you, Mark Irwin.
Yeah.
The music is by Richard Gibbs, who is best known by the two movies that bookended this one. So before 10 Things I Hate About You, he did the music for Dr. Dolittle. And okay. I have to say, I had the CD.
I had the VHS of Dr. Dolittle, the movie, but
I had
the soundtrack.
The CD of the soundtrack. Dreamweaver is on it.
Oh, yeah.
And
R.I.P. Gary, whatever his name is. Yeah.
Yep. And then after 10 Things I Hate About You, he did Big Mama's House.
Gary Wright. For longtime fans of the podcast will remember that the first movie I ever saw in theaters was Big Mama's House 2. So I'm very happy to hear this.
There you go. 10 Things I Hate About You stars Julia Stiles, Heath Ledger, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and Larissa Olenek.
That's Bianca?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she actually was Alex Mack in the Nickelodeon show Secret World of Alex Mack. Did you ever watch that show?
I knew of it, but
she turns into like silver.
It was live action.
Yeah, and she becomes like a silver goo.
I didn't watch live action shows until I was way older.
I liked that show.
Except for like All That and Kenan and Kel.
Yeah, which All That was part of the
yes
Quiet on the Set
yep
situation
which
going
just
on
came
right
out
now. Yeah. I loved Kenan and Kel. What a show. What a theme song.
Kenan and Kel we watched like a few years ago, and it still
great.
Is really, really
holds
good.
Holds up. More than All That
More
does.
Than All That does.
Yeah. There's a lot of other people in this movie, too. Allison Janney has a great little part.
Oh, my goodness.
Larry Miller is great as the dad.
Andrew
Keenan is... Keenan or Keegan?
Keegan.
Is a wonderful villain.
Yeah.
David Krumholtz,
oh,
scene stealer.
Like, low-key, my favorite part of this entire movie.
And you even get a little Gabrielle Union in there.
Yep.
Yeah. It's a good cast. It was considered a breakout movie for much of the young cast, particularly Stiles, Ledger, and Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
And Krumholtz? Oh.
Well, Krumholtz, of course, obviously. It took like 5,000 years for us to come up with something that our friend, Uncle Nick P., recognized him from.
Yes.
Yeah, which is interesting.
I forgot that he was like the neighbor in Harold and Kumar.
I forgot that too. Yeah. But he was just recently in Oppenheimer.
He was.
And he had a good part.
Him and everybody in Hollywood.
every white guy in Hollywood was in Oppenheimer.
Exactly.
So McCullough and Smith, the writers, they wrote the script by kind of sending it back and forth to each other.
Okay.
Which is kind of fun. And it was their first like big movie that they had written. And it was finalized in 1997. A long time ago.
Came out in 99, the movie?
Mm-hmm. Filming took place over 2 months the following year, in 1998, in Washington State, with much of the film being shot at Stadium High School in Tacoma.
I read that the entire movie was shot on locations. Like, there were no sets for this movie at all.
You can kind of tell.
And the school itself was built as a big, like, railroad station originally, which is why it's, like,
burned down.
Which is why it's, like, so grand, like, a grand, like, it looks so, like, amazing. And then it suffered fire damage and it was renovated into high school.
It's really beautiful school, and it's perfect for this movie.
And it's literally right on the Puget Sound, which is crazy.
It's gorgeous.
I assume that's
And
the
it's
Puget
a public
Sound.
High school.
Yeah.
I love it. The movie was a big success, actually. It opened in second at the box office behind, do you know what movie, 1999?
Oh, this was a huge year.
Mm-hmm.
What type of movie?
Sci-fi?
The Matrix?
Yep.
Yeah.
It was behind The Matrix. And eventually made $60.4 million on a $13 million budget. It also did relatively well critically, especially for a movie of that genre.
Ebert gave it 2.5 stars, which is solid.
Yeah, it's solid. There was actually, the year came out, a novelization of the movie written by David Levithan. So there's a New Jersey connection. He's actually from Short Hills. And there's another New Jersey connection too, I'll get to in a second. So David Levithan now is known as a big YA writer. I've read quite a few of his books. He wrote Boy Meets Boy a while back, which was very popular. He also co-wrote a series, Dash and Lily, which became a short Netflix show, which was is really cute, and it's like Christmassy. He did
is that the one with the secret admirer and the letters or whatever?
Yeah, and it's the one with the cat's boyfriend from the first season of Euphoria.
Okay.
Yeah. He also did Will Grayson with that he co-wrote with John Green.
Okay.
And then finally, he also wrote a book, Two Boys Kissing, that I read back a couple years ago. And he, part of that book is inspired by when we were at TC&J. Oh, yeah. Remember the Guinness World Record for longest kiss?
Yeah, we were freshmen, right?
We were freshmen. Yeah. And so that event is actually partly inspiration for his novel there.
Cool.
So a little bit of New Jersey connection. And he did, novelization of 10 Things I Hate About You the year it came out.
So it went from a play in the, 1400s or whatever, yep, to this movie, to a novel, book about the movie, about the play.
To an ABC Family show.
Perfect. Which lasted, just as William Shakespeare, I'm sure, intended.
Which lasted 20 episodes in 2009 and 2010.
Nice.
Larry Miller was the only person in the cast that was in it, in the original.
Yep.
But Cousin Greg was in it.
Oh, man. Nicholas Braun.
Nicholas Braun made an appearance.
Is that it?
That's all I got. All
right. I'm just going to run through the taglines really quick. They're not terrible. They're not that. I mean, they're okay. First one. There are so many different ways to hate. Count them yourself.
Oh, that's cute. I actually like that.
Number two. How do I loathe thee? Let me count the ways.
That's cute.
But that's not. I read that that's not Shakespeare. That's a different writer.
Yeah, but it's still cute. And people think of it as that type.
Number three. Romeo, oh, Romeo, get out of my face.
That's cute, too. They're all cute.
The Romeo ones, no.
It's cute.
So I'm going to switch up the structure a little bit this week. I'm just going to do a brief synopsis. We're just going to jump into it.
Okay.
So brief synopsis. Kat Stratford, played by Julia Stiles, is beautiful, smart, and quite abrasive to most of her fellow teens, meaning that she doesn't attract many boys. Unfortunately for her younger sister, Bianca, played by Larissa Olenek, house rules say that she can't date until Kat has a boyfriend, so strings are pulled to set Kat up for a romance. Bianca has two boys who want to date her, Cameron, played by Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and Joey, played by Andrew Keegan. Soon, Kat crosses paths with handsome new arrival Patrick Verona, played by Heath Ledger. Little does she know, Joey has offered Patrick money to date her so that he can date Bianca. Will Kat let her guard down enough to fall for the effortlessly charming Patrick?
Yes.
She does.
Who wouldn't?
She does.
It's Heath Ledger.
So, you said this movie has a ton of iconic, romantic comedy scenes.
Yes.
This is not my genre.
Yeah.
So I want to know, as we go through, just point them out to me. Be like, oh, this is one of the ones I was talking about.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of funny because I told you that last night, right? And then today, Uncle Nick P said that he's never seen the movie, but he watched the last, the big scene.
The poetry scene?
That's my guess. Oh, a million times.
He said the big scene at the end.
Yeah, so. Which I guess is the poetry scene.
Oh, I actually didn't write his question down, but we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
So... And in absolutely unhinged, Allison Janney basically starts off the movie.
She, I think, is what kicks the movie right off.
I thought it was a little weird because you don't really see her again. You see her in a couple little scenes, but I thought she was going to be a character in the movie that was in the plot, but she really wasn't.
No.
I just wanted to talk about Allison Janney.
I love her.
She's great.
She's so good.
She's always in. I've never watched an Allison Janney role and been did she just take this for the money?
I gotta watch West Wing.
Yeah.
Because
that's a lot of commitment, though.
It's a lot, and it's a lot of, what's his name?
Rob Lowe?
No, the writer.
Oh, Sorkin, yeah.
A lot of Sorkin. But I love her so much. And she was so good in I, Tonya.
Yeah.
Do think that I preferred Laurie Metcalf to win that.
Wow.
I know.
Is that for Lady Bird?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But she was lovely, wonderful.
I was trying to think what Janney was a mom in not too long ago that I loved, and it was Juno.
Oh, my gosh.
That was long ago, but I watched it for the first time.
I saw that on a first date, an only date. We didn't go out again.
Yeah, and she was good in, remember the movie Bad Education?
Yes.
Where she played the principal or whatever?
Hugh Jackman was in that?
Hugh Jackman.
Huge jacked man.
Huge jacked man.
Juno, she's so... Juno's such a good movie.
I was like, there's one movie where she's like a really sweet mom, and I forgot what it was. And it was
she's a stepmom.
Stepmom.
Right? Yep. And she's... But a total mom figure.
Yeah.
In Juno's life. Yeah.
How do we feel about the concept here? So, from a parental perspective, we are parents now.
Yeah.
For a couple years. Is it a good tactic for the dad to be restricting Bianca from dating until Kat is dating?
No, it's a terrible idea. I think that's an awful, awful idea because, number one, it pits the kids against each other.
Yes, and it does.
And it does in the movie.
It's literally the driver of the conflict of the movie.
Number two, I also feel like it could be taken poorly by both of the girls. So, like, Kat, if she's very self-assured, but, like,
you don't think I could date somebody?
Well, yeah, and if you have a girl who's a little more insecure, she could take that to heart. And then on the other hand, you have Bianca, who's like, what, you think I want to just, like, go out and do whatever? Well, you have to restrict me. You think I'm going to go out and be crazy? Which Bianca also says in the movie. And so I think it's a terrible, terrible tactic.
I think it's a very clear dad who doesn't know what to do because he's freaking out because the mom left.
I do think he's a great dad, though.
Do we know why the mom left?
No.
Okay, I'm just wondering. Mm-hmm. Because I know that she did. I thought that she had died, but then they just mentioned that. Then they just mentioned that she left. Mm-hmm. So, definitely a guy who doesn't know what he's doing at the moment.
But I do think he's a really good dad.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, no. It's just this isn't his best. This isn't the flourish.
Not a great strategy.
Just a side note. So this is a scene where they're in one of the first scenes when they're in the house. Mm-hmm. The house.
Should be like a $7 million house right now.
It is, as of the time that this person posted it, when I read about it, it was listed for $2.1 million. It's probably more now. Mm-hmm. I'll actually look it up right now. I'll look it up later. So I love that David Krumholtz's character, Michael,
uh-huh.
He's asking Joey to help Patrick date Kat he's helping him out so that he'll say hi to him in the hallways.
Yeah.
How great is that?
It's funny.
That's great. Krumholtz in this movie is just, he's a 45-year-old man the entire time.
Yeah, he looks so, he doesn't look that old.
He kind of does.
Kind of does.
He looks.
But he acts and speaks so old.
Was there anyone in your high school who like had all these rumors about them? So like they're like, oh, he doesn't have a liver. Like all these like crazy, was there anybody? I didn't have anybody like this, but I'm wondering if there was, it's presented in the movie like it's common. Like it's like, oh, everybody has like, this crazy kid who like everyone's afraid of who does X, Y, and Z and no one knows if it's true. Did you have any of those kids?
No, not really. Honestly, we didn't. We did have a lot of the, I don't even know like how you would describe this, but it's funny. My friends from my, like that were my sister's friend group in college. A lot of them have significant others who grew up in a different kind of socioeconomic status than we did. And so we do have those figures from a working middle class public high school.
Yes.
So we've got the Cookie Monster PJ girl. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah, of course, of course.
The Hot Cheetos Cookie Monster.
Absolutely.
You know exactly what I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
And not everybody apparently knew what we were talking about.
Yep.
So we have that girl.
Yep.
There wasn't many rumors about her. But
I went to a bigger high school than you. I had a lot of those. I had about a dozen.
Yeah.
Flaming Hot Cheeto.
She always walks the mile. Will not run the mile.
No. Well, the ones
strolls.
The ones in my school just didn't do it. They didn't walk to the track.
Did they wear blankets over their? We always got. They always like wore blankets.
Ours were like black sweatshirts, like that type.
Yeah, totally. So no rumors, but we did have the
black sweatshirts.
Hot Cheetos.
Black sweatshirts are like crop tops. Like there was no in between. they were like kind of like proto Billie Eilish. So, I just thought I would point out that apparently Heath Ledger beat out Ashton Kutcher and Josh Hartnett for this role.
Yeah. Well.
He's a better actor than both.
He's a better actor, but I mean, although Josh Hartnett was in Oppenheimer.
Well, that could have been the pre-meet between him and Krumholtz.
yeah, and then Ashton Kutcher, we don't talk about him in 2024 as much.
No. Also, not a great actor.
No.
He's not Heath Ledger.
People love the Butterfly Effect.
Yeah, but never mind.
I haven't seen it.
We'll have to watch the Butterfly Effect.
That movie he was in with Natalie Portman was good. It's either Friends with Benefits or No Strings. I think he was in No Strings Attached.
I think it's No Strings Attached. Yeah. Friends with Benefits is Mila Kunis and Justin Timberlake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I liked both of them.
I didn't watch either of them because they were the exact. They. I was like, why do I choose?
Yeah, it was one of those prestige illusionist things.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What did you? I love how there's a character in this movie. He's not even a character. A person in this movie named Bogey Lowenstein.
Yeah.
And that's his like party that they go to.
Yeah. He was one of the like NBA guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. That David Crummell had like a rivalry with.
Yes. So that scene where it's like a big party scene and that's where Julia Stiles like dancing on the table.
Big Papa's playing.
Big Papa's playing.
Wait, no, it's not Big Papa. It's Juicy. It's a Notorious B.I.G. song.
It's one of the Notorious B.I.G. songs. It's not Big Papa. You're right.
I think it's Juicy.
Juicy or is it Hypnotize?
Oh, it's Hypnotize. It's Hypnotize. It's Hypnotize.
I said this as a joke, but apparently it was a major consideration for her getting the Save the Last Dance role in 2001.
You're joking.
I swear. I was like, oh, is that where she got? And then I literally read that that was one of the considerations.
Did we do Save the Last Dance as an episode?
We did not, but we watched
we
it.
We should have. What a ridiculous movie. So entertaining.
What a ridiculous movie.
And so bad.
So what do you think about the swing scene? Right, is that one of the bigger scenes in the movie? It's right after.
Well, it's funny you say that because right the next year there's a scene on a swing in Bring It On that is also that's also like a romantic sort of thing.
Yeah, so here it's after the party and she has like fallen off the table and Pat catches her and then they're like walking around and they go outside to like a swing set and they're sitting there and they're talking and it's kind of like where they first kind of break the ice like for real. And then she like throws up on him because she's been drinking so much, or at least near him. You don't really see if it's on him, but it's
might
like
be on his shoes,
towards his feet. Yeah. What do you think of that scene? Like, do you think that was a good way to kind of break them in together?
Yeah, I do. I think because you see a softer side of Patrick in it, and you see that he
is it Pat or Patrick?
Is it Patrick? Did I just like make his name?
No, his name's Patrick, but
yeah,
is he? Did they call him Patrick the whole movie?
I don't. I just called him Heath.
I don't know. I don't remember. So I wrote it both ways here.
I think so, but
because I wrote, is it really Cat and Pat?
Oh, I guess it is Cat and Pat. Oh, that's kind of weird.
Yeah.
I think that it shows that, number one, he's got that softer side. Number two, he's not just now doing it for the money, right? Where, you know, he's taking this money to take her out on a date so that Joey can date Bianca.
I haven't even mentioned Joey rules. Joey, I love Joey in this movie.
But I also think that it shows the chemistry between Heath Ledger and Julia Stiles, which I think really works.
I actually thought they were good.
Me too. Together. This is what I think also helps make this movie be a step above a lot of the other kind of movies of the genre that we have talked about over the past couple years, is that number one, Heath Ledger is just a star, like an absolute superstar. But number two, their chemistry is really
him
good.
And Krumholtz, I would say, from this movie.
You're not even joking though. That's
I'm only like
thing.
Half joking. And then they're in the car after that,
yeah.
And she goes to kiss him, mm-hmm. and then he kind of backs off. And I like that because, okay.
Well, you said it's because she just threw up, but he does
it's
say,
both. It's
he says
both.
Something like in the next scene saying like, well,
she wouldn't remember
anything. She wouldn't
anyway.
Remember anything, so I wouldn't do anything like that, which is a very, like, that's great. We love that.
Yes. So what I will say though is like her motivations in this movie are so confusing to me.
Yeah.
Like she's trying to be alternative.
Yeah.
She's trying to be like her own thing. She gets too drunk and she throws up on it. Then he drives her home. Then all this stuff happens. Wouldn't the next morning, wouldn't she probably be like, I mean, of course she'd be embarrassed, I'm sure. But wouldn't she be like, well, that was actually really nice. That's not something that every other guy would do. No, she ices him out. She kicks a sock. She drills a soccer ball at his head the next day.
Well, that's because he rejected her. And so she doesn't want to feel that rejection because she's dealt with rejection from her mom leaving.
But it wasn't.
So somebody else rejected.
But it wasn't actively rejection. He didn't say no. He said, why don't we do this later?
He said, maybe we could do this another time.
It's still.
Which is no. Like, that's rejection, bro. And she's now, her guard is up so much. Number one, after her later reveal that she and Joey were once a thing. And she, when she was vulnerable with him, but then also said, I don't want to like do whatever, he just completely broke up with her and was awful to her. Right. So that's rejection from the only other boy that she was ever interested in. And she has that in the back of her mind about her mom leaving. So if now this guy that she's finally opening up to says, maybe we'll do this another time.
Maybe we'll do this later.
Yeah. Okay. Bye. I get why she kicked a soccer ball at him. I would not take that approach. I actually do understand her motivation.
You got to think of it as, I literally just puked on this guy's shoes. He was nice enough to bring me home. I'm very drunk. The next morning, I was very drunk last night. She has the level of maturity to understand that.
You also have to remember, this is an adaptation of The Taming of the Shrew.
I'm not talking about the predestination of the characters here. I'm talking
about... Which they change it anyway, because she's not very much tamed by the end.
I'm just talking about a character's motivations.
I think I explained my reasoning for understanding it pretty well.
Sure. We haven't really talked about... Actually, first of all, I just want to say Ebert talked about how he says all teenage movies have at least one boring and endless party scene in which everyone is wildly dressed, drunk, and relentlessly colorful. He talks about The Village People and Never Been Kissed.
Never Been Kissed. That's an interesting movie.
These scenes inevitably involve A, a fight, B, barfing, and C, a tearful romantic breakup in front of everybody. He said that the scene in this movie was tedious, and so is the scene where the would-be lovers throw paint balloons at each other.
Oh, I like that scene.
I know there has to be a scene of carefree, colorful frolic, but as I watched them rubbing paint in each other's hair, I began to yearn for that old standby, the obligatory tilt-a-whirl ride. So he was not a fan of this little segment of the movie.
All right.
We also had Cameron and Bianca kind of flirty, and
so that's
and
Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Yeah.
He's so annoying in this movie. I'm sorry.
He's a spunky little kid.
He's precocious.
Yeah.
He's very Ralph Macchio to me in like Karate Kid.
I thought that was an interesting connection that I never thought of.
Yeah, I think he's just a little bit. I always found he's a better actor than Macchio, like at comparing those roles. But Macchio, I just felt had more earnestness and like doe-eyed kind of like optimism to him, whereas Joseph Gordon-Levitt is a little bit snarkier, a little bit like, I don't know. He rubs me the wrong way in this movie.
You don't like Joseph
I don't really like him at his performance as much at all.
Have you seen 50-50?
Yes. He was fine in that.
I like that movie.
He was fine in that. It's not that I don't like him. It's just that I never got the hype, really.
Oh, he's good in Inception, too.
I thought he was like the seventh best person in Inception, though. And he got like all the hype coming out of it. Like Tom Hardy was better.
Yeah, because there was that cool scene.
Yeah. Elliot Page was better. Like there's like 10 Cillian Murphy, there's like 10 people on it. Ken Watanabe's better. Like there's like 10 people on the movie that are better than Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and he got like so much shine coming out of that movie.
So much haterade for Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Anyway, he like makes Bianca feel bad for not wanting to go sailing with him.
He's really into sailing.
Sailing to me has to be like one of the most annoying hobbies.
It's very country club.
It's very the people that didn't know about the Cookie Monster PJs.
Exactly.
There's no way that
exactly. Cameron... If you're saying to yourself, wait, but sailing's like a totally normal thing to have as a hobby, you had no idea what we were talking about with the girl wearing the Cookie Monster pants. It's like people that were like, yeah, well, all my friends grew up skiing. Right. Same thing. If your friends grew up skiing, you do not know what we're talking about with the Cookie Monster pants. Yeah.
If your parents have a lake house, you don't know what we're talking
about. You don't know what we're talking about. Which is fine. Listen, it's fine.
Not everybody needs to know about the Cookie Monster PJs.
Consider yourself lucky.
Speaking of this, what do you think of the romantic chemistries in this movie? So we've talked about Pat and Kat.
Yeah, which is
good.
Iconic.
Totally. So then there's Joey and Bianca, Cameron and Bianca. Who do you think? Obviously, Joey's...
No.
Joey's a narcissist. Like, the whole thing is just a sham.
Yeah.
So, what about Cameron and Bianca?
I think it's cute. I think it actually is very reflective of a high school romance.
Okay.
And they both look so young.
They do look so young.
Which is, they look very appropriately aged for their characters.
And funnily enough, Julia Stiles was 17, but she doesn't look it.
She doesn't look 17. She looks older. Yeah. For sure.
I want to say that Heath Ledger was like 20. He wasn't like super
old. Not super old.
Not super too old. Cromwell's, I think, was 48.
Oh, my God.
Let's see, how old was Krumholtz in this movie? He was 21 when it came out. I'm not sure, maybe I guess it was filmed the year before. He was probably 20.
That's not bad.
Yeah. He looks young enough.
Yeah. I think that the romance between those two is very sweet, so I do like that.
And then this movie also has the relationship that is like the Martin and Chessie from The Parent Trap, which is Michael and Kat's friend, whatever her name was.
Yeah.
Her, like, Shakespeare-obsessed friend.
Oh, yeah. What was her name?
It was, like, Marianna or something like that.
No, it was like a name. It was, like, a word.
It was.
Yeah, she was obsessed with Shakespeare.
Mandela.
Yeah, that's it. Mandela. And they had a, she had, like, a picture of Shakespeare in her locker.
In her locker, yeah.
Like, no, that's not accurate.
Yeah. What do you think the logistics were behind, like, Patrick getting the whole band to do Can't Take My Eyes Off You when he sings it to her at the soccer field? Like, he slips some money to the one kid, like, 45 seconds before this all happens.
Yeah.
Like, the marching band's completely coordinated. Like, do you think it was like, oh, we already got this one in the bag? Like, we already know this one? Or is it
Yeah, definitely.
They're like, we probably do this at the games.
Yeah.
And he's like, play that one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it.
The original song in the script was not this song.
What was it?
It was I Think I Love You by the Partridge Family.
Oh, that's another good one.
But you know why they couldn't use it?
Why?
It was already used in Scream 2 2 years prior.
Oh my gosh. That's so funny.
So I guess they must have owned the rights or something, or they just didn't want to redo it.
I really love that scene, and I know it's totally silly and... Yeah.
Well, that's another one that makes no sense. But
that's one where, like, Heath Ledger's so in.
Yeah.
He said that he wanted his dance moves to be a mix of Fred Astaire and Showgirls.
Okay.
Which is, again, iconic. And it also makes no sense that, like, why would there be security guards?
Why would they stop him? I guess because he, like, took the microphone.
Okay.
But why would there be security guards?
Yeah, exactly. But it's fun when he, like, escapes and then does his dance moves and stuff. I love it. I think that it's such a good scene. And that, to me, is the most iconic scene from the movie.
Okay.
That's
the one I knew. That's the one I really, really knew.
And that's the one that Easy A references.
Yeah.
When she's like, oh, we need a nonsensical musical number in the middle of the movie. That makes no sense. I really, really like that scene.
Her reaction to that one is weird to me too.
Where she's like laughing.
That does not seem like her character at all.
Well, she's letting her, like, she's just all, you know, sometimes the real emotions sneak through.
Sure. I'm not going to get too much into that, but so then he gets detention.
Yeah.
Mr. Chapin, I wrote his name down. He's the soccer coach. So he'd been shot with an arrow by Bianca earlier in the movie.
Accidentally.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, ow!
That was funny.
Like in the middle, like in the background of the scene.
Yeah, it was funny.
He has like an unbelievable like 30 seconds in this scene where, so he's been shot with an arrow. Detention starts. He can't sit on the desk. So he winces when he sits on the desk. And then he busts a kid for smoking weed.
Yeah.
Confiscates the weed. And then he like walks by the kid in front of him and looks at the bag of Cheetos and goes, I'm confiscating this too.
Another Cheetos reference.
Yeah. It's a great, that's one of my favorite like little moments of the movie.
There's a lot of little funny little scenes.
The teachers
there.
In this movie
they make the staff members really funny little characters.
It reminded me a lot of Easy A and Mean Girls.
100%.
I also wrote down the school play is All Quiet on the Western Front.
What?
Was that like ever a real play?
I don't know. I did not catch that. That is so bizarre.
When they were in detention, it was in the, I guess, where all the play or all like the sets were. And in the background, it just was a big sign that said All Quiet on the Western Front.
That is so strange.
I also wrote down this quote from Kat and Bianca's dad. Bianca's talking about going to prom. And he's like worried about what's going to happen. And she goes, you know, so what? We'll go, we'll hold hands, we'll dance, we'll kiss, and then we'll go home. And then...
No, don't even say it.
Dad goes, I'm going to say it. Kissing isn't what keeps me up to my arms and placenta all day long.
It's just, as a pregnant woman, I just don't want to hear that.
That was maybe my favorite line of the entire movie.
The dad's really funny.
It came out of nowhere.
He's great. He's got a lot of good one-liners.
I will say, though, with Bianca and Kat, like, the scene where Kat's telling Bianca about Joey dumping her and all that, like, I think that's Julia Stiles' best performance in the movie.
Yeah.
I think that she and Bianca are great together.
It reminds me of what a really like accurate sister relationship that like, it's not the sister relationship I had in high school, but it's
one, a movie sister, like a good movie.
And it's
also
it's one that a lot of people have, where there's like this little bit of, I wouldn't say they have a rivalry, but there's not really an understanding of each other throughout a lot of it. And they reacted very differently to their mom leaving. And it's interesting to see how, as the movie progresses, they start to understand each other more.
Yes.
I really like that.
I thought they were really cute in that scene together. Like, yeah, it was when great. They're like, you get them kind of bickering throughout the movie, but that scene, I think, didn't go too far into the sappiness, even though like the storyline itself is a little bit meh. But like the way that they interacted with each other, I thought was really like charming.
Yeah.
What did you think of the prom in general? Like your thoughts on the vibe of the prom?
I mean, it's so 1999.
Yeah. Well, Joey, first of all, Joey with the like cream colored coat over the tux.
All of the outfits were very, fire. Very interesting.
Fire. Bianca's dress, not so much.
It was a choice. It was a tutu dress.
It was like almost like a Disney princess t-shirt. Dress kind of thing.
Yeah, but with like a satin t-shirt.
She also wore like a weird like bedazzled butterfly t-shirt earlier in the movie. I was like, what is this?
Again, very 90s.
Yeah. I didn't think that.
I hated Kat's shawl.
Oh, man. Also, but come on. The prom was pretty sick.
It was bumping.
They had a, like, the band was, like, ripping.
I think it was, there were two bands. I think it was Save Ferris and Letters to Cleo.
Letters to Cleo, I know, was the one at the end on the roof.
Okay.
I'm not sure which one is who yeah. that one was.
There were a couple live bands.
They blew the doors off with Cruel to Be Kind. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, they did.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how accurate would you say this is to, like... your run-of-the-mill high school prom?
I mean, I don't know. I've been to a couple. Have you been to a couple proms?
Oh, you haven't been to any, like, for school at all?
I went to one.
How does it compare?
Like, many years ago. It's very different. Very different.
They don't get big bands like this?
No. It's usually a DJ. Bumping Soulja Boy.
And... Oh, yeah. Still? Well, no. Still as of whenever?
No, not really.
So, Joey, he's like a commercial kid.
Yes.
I knew a commercial kid in high school.
Oh, really? Did you?
Yeah. You know a commercial kid, too. I'll tell you who it was.
Oh.
He's hyped. He's like, I'm in underwear commercials. I'm in hemorrhoid commercials. he's like showing her the different poses for like each of the products that he does.
Funny. It's a great
character. He's so funny in this movie. Then later when Bianca punches him at prom, when he's like being mean to Cameron, she's like, that's for Cameron. That's for Kat. And that one's for me.
Yeah.
He says he's going to be in a nose spray ad, and that's why he's upset at her. What commercial would you cast him in?
Him? Anything.
He's electric.
I would cast him in anything.
Capital One?
Yeah. What's in your wallet?
Would you give him lines, I guess, is the real question.
I would give him one line.
He would be absolutely torture to work with, probably even on a... But you know that he comes from a family that, like, his parents are probably, like... You better treat my son with respect. It's you're in a freaking toothpaste ad, dude.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
relax.
For sure.
You know?
Yeah.
He definitely comes from that type of family. That another type of family who doesn't know about the Cookie Monster PJs.
That's right.
Without a doubt. Yeah, so prom, you know, kind of goes, they all the good people get together kind of.
It's funny because like at the end, you know, it could be cliche that you have all these couples, but that is very Shakespearean comedy.
Yeah.
Everyone
either ends up together or dead.
That's the whole thing. A Shakespeare comedy isn't really comedy like that. It means that it ends in marriages, right? It ends with love and happiness. And then a Shakespeare tragedy, everybody dies.
Yeah. At the end of prom, Patrick and Kat don't end up together just yet.
Right. But at the end of the movie, you've got multiple couples that are together.
Yes.
And I think that is a really cool throwback to what the end of the source material would have it be.
Yeah, so she gets into, like, Sarah Lawrence or what a Kat does.
Yes.
Which, actually, I forgot her name. The actress who plays Bianca went to Sarah Lawrence. So it was
Larissa Olenek.
She went to Sarah Lawrence.
Oh, cool.
So it was kind of like a little cool connection.
That is.
And then at the end, there's, like, the helicopter shot, like I said, of the band playing. In an interview, it was Letters to Cleo. The lead singer said they had to perform their song on a patch of roof the size of her kitchen on a windy day. And they said, this is a helicopter shot. And it costs $500,000 every time the helicopter has to take off. So don't F this up.
Why would they even do it then? Like, it's a pointless ending.
Of course it doesn't cost. It couldn't have cost that much because the budget wasn't that high.
No.
But like, yeah. So she said, as we started playing, we saw the helicopter appear off in the distance. It's hard to say how far away it was at first because we were so high up in the air. But then all of a sudden, the helicopter does this dive bomb directly towards us. Is the helicopter out of control? It's supposed to be coming at us like this. And I'm thinking, don't F up. Keep singing the song. Don't F up. It costs $500,000 every time this takes off. It was unbelievably scary, but it turned out to be amazing. Is what she said.
Okay.
All right. Letters to Cleo Singer. Kay Hanley. Also, regarding the ending, bring back outtakes in the credits, please.
I love it. Do you know what I found funny about these outtakes? Is that usually in the movies that we think of that have them, it seems that they're also edited to be sort of movie ready. Here, they would have the dancers in the background with no music playing.
Right.
They would have kind of this empty sound around it. Right? Like, it was very much, we just shot this and we're not adding anything to it. We're not doing any editing. We're not doing any additions that we're putting in here. And I thought that was so interesting.
Yeah. It, like, even the one with Mr. Morgan, where he, like, flubs the line that he does say in the movie, I think.
Uh-huh.
But, so it's clearly one of the takes for the movie that was not just, like, a throwaway take. But it was even kind of, it fit right in with the other deleted scene, or the other outtakes, too.
Yeah.
Strange. Mr. Morgan, we didn't talk about Mr. Morgan.
Yeah.
He is the English teacher.
Yeah.
He is unreal. Great He's just character. Cursing at the kids.
Great character.
Constantly. The one quote I wrote down was after Joey got punched by Bianca and he's wearing sunglasses in class and he just goes, hey, Shaft, to lose the glasses.
yeah, that's right. he's a great character.
Yeah, can you give us like a professional review of Mr. Morgan?
Would not recommend the cursing. but I will say this. He clearly is interested in the material that he's teaching, which is always important. And you could tell that the kids enjoy him because they're paying attention and are actively engaged.
I liked when Kat was talking about how she was excited to write about the sonnet. And he was like, get out.
Yeah, because he's so used to her, which is such a true teacher thing where, like, if there's a kid who has been, you know, busting your chops this whole time, if they came and were like, oh, I'm so excited to do this assignment, you'd be like, uh-huh.
Yeah, sure, dude.
Yeah, exactly. So I really like that.
And then, of course, it turns out to be her, like, big moment at the end of the movie where she does the 10 things I hate about you and she starts crying. And
Well, did you know that one of my education classes, we had, I think it was my teaching writing class, I think. That one of the last assignments was we were given someone else in the class's name and we had to write a writing piece about them.
That literally sounds like my worst nightmare.
And then we had to perform it in front of the whole class.
That sounds absolutely horrendous to
me. And the person who had me did a 10 Things I Hate About You poem about me.
Oh my God. Did they cry?
No.
Ugh.
No. Disappointed.
Come on. You
no.
gotta
sell
it.
It was actually really nice. It was a very nice thing.
So yeah, that's pretty much the end of the movie.
Yeah.
They get together and they like drive off or something like that.
Well, they're in the parking lot at the end.
Oh yeah. Cause he gives her the
guitar
Fender.
He had spent all the money that he had gotten, right. From Joey to take her out, right. That bet. And he spent it on a guitar for her.
Right. So yeah, that's 10 Things I Hate About You. Roger Ebert, he also said the movie is charming. I just wanted to sort of close it out because he kind of gave some bad stuff in the beginning, but he does
come around.
Like I said, he gave it 2.5 and he gave it a thumbs up. He said, the movie is charming despite its exhausted wheeze of an ancient recycled plot idea. Boy takes bribe to ask girl to prom, then discovers that he really likes her, but then she finds out about the bribe and hates him.
Uh-huh.
I haven't seen that idea in almost 2 months since She's All That.
Yeah, that isn't She's All That. You're right.
But he did like the movie.
Here's my question to you. So the way that it's done in this movie, at least, because you're right, it is a trope. It's a little bit of a cliche. The bribe and then whatever. How do you feel about it in this movie? Like, do you feel like Patrick Heath Ledger's character truly got across that he really was in it for Kat? Or, like, did it fall flat for you?
The only reason it came across is because Heath Ledger did such a good job.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it had been a different or a lesser act. I mean, different. I'm sure there's other actors could have pulled it off.
Right. Of
but course. Like, because it's someone of his caliber,
you feel like he really, truly is torn apart at this idea of like, oh, I really like her and I don't know how to navigate this situation.
In every role I've seen him in, which is admittedly not a ton, his emotion, whatever his predominant emotion is at the time, whether it's, you know, he's sort of like hiding a little bit of love here, like whatever it is, his insanity in The Dark Knight, like it is, you could, it bleeds through him. Like he's just one of those actors.
Like in Brokeback Mountain.
Like in Brokeback Mountain, yeah. Exactly. Like he's just one of those actors that you can feel it coming out of every pore of his body. Like mm-hmm. he's, and it doesn't matter what it is, it seems like. Because this mm-hmm. is now three, those are three movies right there that are all completely different.
Yes. Oh, what a talent.
So, I mean, yeah, I think if it had been somebody who wasn't as good of an actor, it would have probably fallen flat.
We should test that theory with She's All That eventually.
Maybe. Why? Who are you trying to say is a lesser actor?
Freddie Prinze Jr.
Freddie Prinze Jr.
Who, I like Freddie Prinze Jr. Listen, I like Fred as much as the next guy, but...
speaking of performances, why was Julia Stiles like an it girl around this time?
I couldn't answer that question for you, to be honest. I really, truly don't know.
So,
but you're right. She was between this and Save the Last Dance.
Yeah. And then Born Identity. Like, she was in a lot of that stuff in the turn of the century, turn of the millennium era.
She just had her third kid.
Congratulations, Julia.
Yep.
So you have a theory, piggybacking off of this.
Yeah.
That every famous actor or actress is famous for a reason.
Yes.
And that they have at least one role that proves that.
Yeah.
Have you had that experience with Julia Stiles yet? Is it this one?
It's got to be this one because you know what? I rewatching it this time, I really enjoyed her in it.
I actually wrote this before we watched the movie.
Yeah.
Because I knew that was something I wanted to talk about.
You know, a lot of the other stuff that I have seen her in, which again is not a ton.
Oh, I saw her in The Omen 2006.
Oh, yeah.
Hustler she was in. She was okay in that.
She was okay. Right, exactly. Mm. Did you like her in Dexter?
No, that was my least favorite season.
Oh.
Okay. Well, no, sorry. Let me clarify. The last season was my least favorite season.
Right.
But that was the first season where I was like, does this show suck now?
This movie, I think she is great.
I think that I wrote that she's almost good.
Yeah.
She fits the role well. She has good chemistry with Bianca. She has good chemistry with Patrick. Like, she's good.
Yeah.
She fits it perfectly. And she gets to be like just quirky enough.
She's believable.
She's believably quirky in this way where she's just randomly saying big words, mm-hmm. like for like the Shakespearean aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
I liked her in this movie, and I would say that this is probably the one for me too.
Yeah.
Speaking of Shakespeare, what are your favorite Shakespeare adaptations? I think we may have talked about this a long time ago.
Yeah.
But I don't really remember.
What are some of them? Let's say like Lion King.
Yeah. Ha, 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 ha.
But it is.
Succession.
Yeah. Like, you know, you got those. Everything Shakespeare. I really do like She's the Man.
Yeah.
It's really fun. Channing Tatum's really good in it.
I always confuse She's the Man and She's All That.
Yeah. No. She's the Man.
That's
which
the
is
soccer one, right?
Yes. With exactly. Amanda Bynes. Yep. That's 12th Night.
Which one is She's All That? Is Freddie Prinze Jr. and who?
Rachel Lee Cook.
Okay.
So, yeah.
I said, this is not my genre.
But I'm not sure. Like, a lot of the, like, literature adaptations that I like are, like, Jane Austen adaptations, like Clueless.
Yeah. I mean, I'll just hit you with Throne of Blood.
Throne of Blood?
That's Akira Kurosawa's Macbeth adaptation.
Oh, okay. That sounds scary.
And it's like a samurai Macbeth. It's
okay.
Like the same story, but it's just...
Cool.
Yeah, it's one of the all-time greats. Like,
yeah.
And then, of course, neat. Tragedy of Macbeth.
That was good.
Which was Denzel.
And Frances McDormand.
Yeah, it was...
Black and White.
One of the Coens.
One of the
Joel.
Coens did it.
Joel Coen of... Bill Murray wanted to work with Joel Coen, so he signed on for Garfield
but
it was
Joel Coen.
A different Joel Coen.
Yeah. Iconic.
Yeah, we're talking Coen brothers.
Yes.
Yeah, no, you're right, though. Shakespeare isn't everything.
Yeah.
And even if it's not Shakespeare, per se, like, Easy A is not Shakespeare. Obviously, it's Hawthorne, but, like...
Right.
It's kind of the same, it's kind of the same vibe.
It's all the same vibe.
What about people like Romeo and Juliet from the 90s? Did you like that one?
Yeah, I did.
I watched it in high school, and my freshman year English teacher was strange and fond
eccentric
and was fond of pausing specifically on the moments where
and you shouldn't be pausing
high school students in high school
but she did it for the LOL.
Oh, it was totally for
yeah,
the
I
LOL.
Like that, that's funny.
I liked that she knew
I
that.
Would never do that, but
I liked that she well she retired that year.
Oh, so she just did not care at that point.
She took every Friday off the second half of the year.
Yeah.
I
I'm honestly.
I just love that she knew the timestamps.
Oh, yeah.
It was going to happen.
Oh, listen. The amount of times that, like, a kid will ask me what page something's on, and I'm like,
yeah.
72. And they're like, how do you know that?
She probably had been watching it since 1996 in class.
My God. Yeah, I'm now a Baz Luhrmann girly after not being one all throughout. Like, I hated Moulin Rouge. Now I love Moulin Rouge.
Yeah.
So, you know, I always liked Romeo and Juliet, the adaptation.
I will say no.
It ages. It's not.
Yeah.
Like, just not like, oh, the con, like, they could never make it. No, like, not like that. But, like, just, it feels a little like, okay.
Yeah.
At this point. But back when it came out, it was like, oh, my gosh.
I will say no good words about Elvis. But other than that, yeah, I think I agree with you. I haven't seen, like, he did Australia.
I like that. The Doja Cat song was pretty good. Yeah, he did Australia, which I haven't seen. Yeah.
But yeah, no, I love Moulin Rouge.
And The Great Gatsby's, you know.
I never actually saw it.
Yeah.
My last question, I just want to end with a Kiss, Marry, Kill.
Yeah.
And I know that for you specifically, never in 1,000 years would you kiss or marry Joey.
No.
So we're going to go with Patrick, Cameron, and Michael.
Okay.
Give me a Kiss, Marry, Kill.
I would marry Patrick.
Okay.
Because Heath Ledger is amazing. Period. I would honestly, as a 32-year-old woman,
I'm saying we're going back. You're in high school.
Okay, no. Nowadays, if like these guys, you know, went on the same trajectory that they were on, and they're now in their 30s or whatever, then I would probably kiss David Krumholtz.
Yes,
because he's fun.
Yes.
And then probably kill Cameron. But if I was like 16. And they are 16. You know, Cameron's so sweet.
He's not so sweet.
He's so cute.
He is not
cute
so cute.
Cute as a button.
He is so annoying.
All right, how about you? We got Kat, we got Bianca, and then we got Allison Janney.
Janney, you're kissing Janney, trust me.
Oh my God.
I think I would marry Bianca. I think that she's annoying now, but I think that she would probably grow up to be fine.
What about Kat? What's wrong with Kat?
I'm killing Kat.
You don't like the
I think she's got a
riot
little,
girl.
I think she's got no. It's not that. I think that she's got a. She's too much of a tryhard in the opposite way.
You don't think that she would, if you're taming the shrew. You don't think that she would be, that personality would be a positive for you.
Taming the shrew is so much effort.
I have such a strong personality.
But it's a different. It's different.
Yeah.
It's different. In reality, though, I would definitely kill Janney.
She's crazy.
In reality, I would kill Janney, kiss Kat.
The character.
Marry Bianca. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't
you
remember.
You would marry Allison Janney easily.
Be, yeah. I don't know her character's name. So.
Oh, it was Mrs. Perky, right?
Oh, yeah, you're right. It was. I would kill Mrs. Perky. And then I actually want to actually end on a Vulture article that David Krumholtz wrote in 2015.
Oh, cool.
He just talked about this movie, and he said he was so happy to be a part of it because it was the first one that he had done that was not with, like, older actors.
Yeah.
So he was very happy to be around kids in their teenage years.
Yeah, it's just his peers.
Yeah, he said, this was a chance to work with my peers, and as only Kismet would allow, I found myself getting along famously with my castmates. Which, again, he said in 2015, but Michael would have said in this movie.
Totally.
In 1999. He said, still, for the first week or so of filming, we were missing a key component, our lead actor. We had only heard stories from the producers about the disarming charisma of a handsome Aussie from Perth with an infectious smile who was busy completing his work on an Australian TV series called Roar. By the end of week one, we had all established such strong friendships that we wondered how someone named Heath could possibly manage to find his place in our inner circle. This was a concern that was remedied a few days later when he arrived and we found yet another comrade in sensibility. The group with Heath only got stronger. Work was fun, and after work we were inseparable. We laughed, we partied, we rapped. Joseph Gordon-Levitt turned me on to Fish, and I turned him on to Wu-Tang. Gabrielle Union had us in stitches. Julia Stiles brought her own brand of Soho-bred artistic intellectualism at only 17, mind you. Larissa Olenek's laughter filled the room, and we marveled at the tonedness of Andrew Keegan's muscles, a great sport. But it was Heath, a natural storyteller and always reliable for a cheesy joke, who transfixed us. Before I knew it, the cast was experiencing what I've since found to be all too rare, a unified chemistry throughout the ensemble without a single bad apple in the bunch. The experience was communal. It sang like a well-tuned chorus both on screen and off, and we all agreed that we were having the best summer of our lives. I suspect that it's that beautiful coalition of actors that audiences respond to most when watching 10 Things I Hate About You. This mutual respect and affection is why audiences indelibly link the film with independence and true romance. I was lucky to be there. I was lucky to be with that cast, and I was extremely lucky to have made friends with a normal, everyday guy named Heath, whose enthusiasm and talent were boundless, who shined in every single frame of film. Who can ever forget Heath Ledger singing, "You're Just Too Good to Be True," with the backing of a high school marching band in the film's glorious climax? I certainly can't.
Lovely.
Yeah.
And you can, that's 100% right. You can feel the fun in it.
Yep.
Yep. I love that.
Shout out Krumholz.
Yeah.
He literally sounds like his character from the movie.
We love you, David Krumholz.
We do love David Krumholz. Yeah, so that's what I've got on 10 Things I Hate About You.
Amazing.
So does 10 Things I Hate About You make Baby's First Watch List?
Yeah.
Yeah, honestly, I wasn't 100% coming in. I wasn't sure if I was going to like it. Like I said, this is not my genre. It's not my style of movie. We've watched some other ones in the past.
That haven't hit as hard for you.
Haven't hit as hard for me, but I would put this up there. It's a good one.
Yay. Oh my God, I'm excited.
Yeah, I would let my kid watch this, you know, as soon as it's appropriate for the... There's a little bit of language.
It's a little saucy.
Alice and Janney stuff.
A little saucy. But it's fun.
The bratwurst stuff.
And it's all in good fun.
Yeah.
Where would you rank this in, like, if you're talking about among some of the top romantic comedies around, like compared to, like, let's say Easy A and Bring It On and Mean Girls and all that kind of stuff?
I have this one above Bring It On.
Yeah.
Bring
It On is great for social commentary, though.
I have it probably above Easy A, actually.
Really?
I mean, I'm looking at it from a perspective of, like, I have a connection with Easy A because I've watched it a bunch
of
times.
Lovely. I love
it. But, like,
movie.
Just thinking about it, like, movie versus movie, I think this is better than Easy A.
Really?
Sorry, Emma, but, like, it just, Easy A, you can just tell, like, now that I'm watching some of these other movies, you can tell that Easy A is pulling this from this, pulling this from this. And while this is
purposefully.
Oh, yeah, of course. And while this is pulling from the 1500s in some ways, it just feels like
fresher.
It feels fresher and it feels more authentic. And I think that the cast top to bottom is like giving the performances of their lives in this movie.
Well, I do think that the chemistry between the leads matters.
Yeah.
And I like an Easy A, Penn Badgley, I like him. He's fine.
Yeah. It was whatever.
But when you've got
Emma Stone's had better chemistry with 15 other people in movies, you know?
Yeah. In Poor Things.
Yeah. 15 other people in Poor Things.
So when you have a love interest that ends up being such a talent, who unfortunately we didn't get to see decades of work from.
Yeah.
Like Heath Ledger, it's hard to look at movies where you have actors that still work and do well, but
oh yeah,
are not of that same caliber.
I would say it's up there for like a teen movie kind of romantic comedy for me, for sure.
Heck yeah, we gotta watch She's the Man too, because you got that with Channing Tatum too.
I mean, if Ebert did it 2 months later, maybe I'll have to do it in reverse.
No, that's She's All That.
Ah, see what I'm talking about. yeah. So yeah, that's 10 Things I Hate About You. That's what I got. Anything else?
No, I like the way you did that.
The format?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it worked better.
More fun.
Yeah. So next week we are gonna do our first Spielberg in a while. It's our second Spielberg overall, I think.
I think so.
We just did Jaws.
Yeah.
We're going to be doing 1993's Jurassic Park.
Oh, we also did Poltergeist, right?
Yeah, which allegedly might have
been.
Yeah,
we're doing Jurassic Park, which, by the way,
neither of us liked the first time we saw it. So
I'm open, though.
I'm open, too. It's a totally different time in my life.
I love Laura Dern.
I've always loved the way the dinosaurs looked. I was big into dinosaurs when I was a kid.
I like the concept.
But I never actually watched the movie until, like, college.
The music's cool.
And I wasn't a big fan.
We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next week for Jurassic Park.
Okay, goodbye.
See you later.